We have stage one and stage two LRT updates. So we have John Manconi and Michael Morgan, and we'll hold the questions till the end of the presentations and then do the same thing based on the voting sheet. So Mr. Manconi, Mr. Morgan, the floor is yours for items three and four.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm going to turn it right over to Mr. Morgan for his presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So I do have a presentation, so I'll just give a second for it to get up on the screen. Just going to take you through, there's two presentations, the first on stage one LRT. I'm just going to do a refresh on where we are in terms of the status of the contract with Rita Transit Group, what's been going on. So on slide two, as you recall, we issued a notice of default to Rita Transit Group on March 10th. That essentially references the contractual requirement for them to provide a plan to address the performance of the system. Obviously, the first six to 8 months of the system up until about April were not satisfactory, and so that led to the default. RTG did respond to that initial notice and provided us a plan on March 31st. We had our technical advisors review that plan. There's a number of issues with the plan in terms of meeting the contract requirements, and so we asked them to revise that plan with a new due date of April 24th in order to address primarily timelines, resourcing, and prioritization of technical issues. So I'll go on to slide three. Rita Transit Group did respond to that plan, and they gave us an updated plan on April 24th. Again, we got the technical advisors together, the contract advisors together, to review that plan. We note that, as was the case in the first plan, that it was heavily qualified by potential anticipated impacts from the COVID-19 pandemic. A lot of supply chain issues or noted concerns regarding the supply chain. A lot of European suppliers, providing parts for doors and other things, power supplies, and so that's obviously affected, certainly qualified their plan in terms of how they responded. The revision to the plan provided some additional detail, and I'll go into that in the subsequent slide. The one thing that the plan didn't do was it did not declare a timeline for when the performance would improve. They did provide timelines for each of the individual items, which was helpful in terms of understanding their approach and the timing of those individual items, but they didn't declare an overall date for performance improvement, which in and of itself is not sufficient in terms of the plan. So we have ongoing concerns with the plan, but we are working on the technical issues to advance those as much as possible. So I'll move on to slide four. So in RTG's plan, they did in the revision to the plan, they did provide a top seven list or top seven items that really are the key contributors to performance improvement. Now, each of these items has a number of sub-items to them. Vehicle brakes has probably five or six sub-items with individual timelines. One of the big ones is an update to the train control software that's required. There's some work on the brake units themselves. So if you recall, this is all kind of going back to the performance in January and February, where the symptoms were wheel flaps, but that were taking a number of vehicles out of service, and that obviously kind of falls back to the brake system. The overhead catenary system, so a number of very notable kind of incidents this year with the wires dropping and then obviously a larger pull down in San Juan Tunnel. So they've got action items for each of those. Some of them are, it's a matter of adjustments and cleaning. The chemicals that are coming off the highways are actually compromising some of the components, so they're doing some rectification there. That's a pretty intensive activity. They've been using the recent shutdowns to get ahead of that work. Switch heater failures, they continue to make modifications and changes to the switch heaters. We continue to press them to do as much as possible to do more than they're planning today, and so that's something that we'll be working closely with them on. Vehicle traction power, so these are, some components on the rooftop of the vehicle that are kind of well-known to the community now, inductors, line contactors, circuit breakers. So we had a series of failures, all during inclement weather in January, February, March. Those issues have been mitigated. They have a number of fixes that are in progress. But again, the timelines are spread out on a few of these things. There's some immediate mitigations, but long-term fixes to get all of those resolved. vehicle passenger doors. The performance of those doors has not been satisfactory. They do have a software change that is potentially going to be rolled out end of this month or next month, which should improve the performance. There's some mechanical adjustments that need to be made, some mechanical parts that need to be updated as well. The item six on the list, so CVS units, so these are units that provide auxiliary power for lighting and train control and all the elements on the train other than traction power. Those units, they've really struggled. Their supply chain linked back to Europe and as well as some manufacturing capacity in Quebec. So they struggled to get ahead of the curve on those units. We have a schedule that shows basically 2 to 3 units arriving per month. They need to do some additional work to get ahead of that because that's really affecting their fleet availability and their ability to kind of stay ahead of the curve in terms of fixes on the fleet. Item seven, vehicle HVAC. And so, you know, this is ahead of the hot summer that's coming, wanting to make sure that everything, you know, on the cooling system is working as it should, in particular, making sure that the driver's cab is cooled correctly in order to meet the specifications. We obviously have the ability to reject a vehicle that where the cooling is not working correctly and not put it into service, and that will have a big impact on their ability to run the fleet if we need to start doing that. On the backside of that is the heating capabilities, and we didn't have a cold winter, but we saw a couple of times where we saw some issues with the floor heating and the heating of the vehicles generally. So those items are on their list. They need to be fixed. All of seven of those items directly affect their fleet availability, and so it's important for them to get ahead of those items. Now, they've provided the individual timelines for all of those. Some of them are scheduled for completion this summer, but a lot of them actually run out until the end of the year. And so that's you know, not acceptable in terms of improving the performance. We need something, a system that's running to its full capacity, you know, this summer. We can't wait until the end of the year, and we certainly can't wait until the next winter. So I'll just move on to slide five, the corrective action plan from RTG status 2 slide. So in addition to the specific technical fixes, they've identified a series of kind of organizational or leadership or strategy changes that they're going to undertake to help deliver an improvement in service. So this is RTG's plan. RTG responding to the city, indicating that they want to expedite the delivery of spare vehicles from stage 2. To the extent that they can add more vehicles into the fleet, that helps improve their fleet spare ratio. So if they have to take vehicles out of service for corrective maintenance or planned maintenance, then it gives them a lot more flexibility, a lot more capacity to run the fleet. You know, item two, the technical improvements we talked about. Item three, stepping back and providing a holistic system reliability growth plan. That looks at how do they implement the modifications, what's the benefit of those modifications, and how do we measure that over time. Item four, stabilizing the resourcing, obviously wanting to kind of get up to full speed on that once the COVID impacts start to lessen. The same with their supply chain, stabilizing the supply chain and making sure they have access to all the right parts. And then internally, they've looked at, you know, updating their governance structure, specifically looking at this technical improvement plan to make sure that they assign a project manager to it, to make sure that they've got the right people and right resources tasked with undertaking these improvements, and then wrapping that all up under a master schedule. So they have appointed a project manager to lead these work. We are starting to have coordination calls to discuss the improvements and get updates and kind of understand how they're making out with the progress on this plan and what we can expect in terms of improvements. I'll go to the next slide six, just to kind of give an update on some of the issues that we saw earlier in the year, or some of the perhaps maybe the state of the nation for April and May. So starting in April 2020. A ridership and a number of items that were taking place in the environment with transit, we reduced the number of trains in service during peak to 9 trains. That essentially, having 9 trains on the line during peak service created an opportunity for RTG to get ahead of some of these changes, some of this work on the vehicles. So they would have access, essentially, to more vehicles during the daytime to do additional works, to get ahead of corrective maintenance. However, the response has been also impacted by COVID-19, and so they have it's not a one-for-one as compared to a regular year. Some of the parts that they need to keep the vehicles going or to repair those additional vehicles that are now available in maintenance are not available. The CVS units in particular are problematic for them. Some of the spare materials for other fixes on the network are problematic. But despite all that, they have been able to, and the city's accepted the first two vehicles from the Stage 2 fleet order, so the fleet order of 38 vehicles. Two of those have now been completed. They're added to the pool of vehicles that are available for service, and we're doing additional testing on the remainder of the fleet. There's two more vehicles that are undergoing testing now. So if we take two more vehicles, and I go to slide 7, just to kind of summarize what the fleet status is, and there's a couple of graphs here, graphics, just to kind of explain what's happening. So 34 vehicles were provided to the city at revenue service availability. We've now completed testing on two additional Stage 2 vehicles, and so the fleet size is now up to 36. Obviously, the peak capacity that we're working towards is to have the 30 individual vehicles or 15 double cars in service during morning peak, and that's what we want to get back to by the end of the summer. So if we go to slide 8, just gives you kind of a status of where we are in terms of the entire fleet and what's operating on the system and what's in maintenance and what's happening with the vehicles that aren't being used on a daily basis. Essentially, we're running 9 double trains in the morning peak service and the afternoon peak service. OC Transport also has that availability of two additional double trains as hot spares. And so if there's an issue with vehicles getting soiled or needing to come out of service, they have hot spares that are ready to go. Now, the remaining 7 vehicles are in a variety of states. A couple of them are in what's called a 100,000-kilometer maintenance. Maintenance that requires a few days to undertake. A couple of them are in the modification program, and then there's a few others that are under corrective maintenance. So essentially all of these vehicles are actively being used, and we're swapping them in and out of service. The fact that RTG now has access to 7 double trains in the maintenance shop essentially at all times gives them an opportunity to get ahead of their modification program. As they bring on new fixes to help with performance, they can quickly deploy those. So it really provides them an advantage on the maintenance side to get ahead of some of the work that's required on the vehicles to improve the performance of the system. So if I move on to slide 9, so we talked a little bit about access to vehicles and the vehicle improvement. The city is trying to be a good partner and provide as much access as possible to the vehicles and the system to make improvements to ensure that we come out of this environment with a system that works to the levels that are specified in the contract. And so working with RTG, we did allow them to do a two-day shutdown on May 2nd and 3rd, and we're just coming to the tail end now today of a five-day shutdown. The shutdown really, we offered them to RTG to help ensure that they had as much access as possible to implement the technical fixes that they identified that drive performance. So testing of the train control software, detailed cleaning and inspection of the catenary system. There's a number of potentially compromised parafoil units that hold the wire in place, and we wanted them to get out there and inspect those and clean them and fix them as quickly as possible. And so that's much easier to do during a shutdown. They're also using the opportunity to do some of the routine work, some additional testing that they need to do. So it's really, the shutdown periods are really used to give them an opportunity to advance the modifications and corrective actions as quickly as possible. At the same time, they are doing other works and things like cleaning the stations and making sure that the system is in top condition for when we open it up again. If I go to slide 10, just talk a little bit about some of the concerns with the plans and some of, reinforce what the city is doing to try to kind of accelerate these works. We're trying to really working hard with RTG to understand when is the service going to improve, when do all these little technical fixes culminate in a significant performance improvement. They haven't declared a specific date for when the service will improve. So we're working with them on that, but that's clearly a clear flaw in their plan as it relates to the contract. So we need them to bring forward things as much as possible. A number of their timelines run out to the end of the year, but we're pressing them to have everything finished by end of summer, such that we can operate the system at the level that we expect. We're at the tail end of the five-day shutdown now. We're out working with them. There may be some additional weekend closures just to get ahead of some additional work. After this five-day closure is complete, we're going to kind of review the amount of work that they were able to accomplish, assess their progress against their plan, and determine, you know, what, if anything else, we can do to accelerate additional work as part of their performance improvement plan. So I'll just move to the last slide on the stage one LRT. And so this is really just where we are in terms of next steps. You know, staff at all levels are working closely with RTG to make sure they're absolutely focused on improving the performance of the system. You know, despite all the activity that's going on to correct the system, the notice of default still persists, and we expect it to persist until they're able to demonstrate that the system works reliably, you know, and that's at the levels of ridership and level of train service that we expect on the contract. We're focused on pushing them to make sure it's all resolved to the extent possible by the end of the summer, but, you know, keeping a close eye on understanding that a lot of our issues kind of came out of winter performance last year with the inductors, so wanting to make sure that all of the inductors and all the kind of secondary pieces that failed during winter are corrected before that time. In terms of the next steps, you know, we are expecting to kind of do a review of the progress that was made during these last shutdowns, get some updates on the rollout plan for the summer software changes, and we will come back to council in June with that update to provide some additional detail on the progress that's been made with their performance program. John, I don't know, did you have any wrap-up comments on this before I move to the next presentation?
No, I think I believe the mayor will default to the mayor in terms of whether we're going or we stop.
Yeah, don't keep going, and then we'll go back to the questions. Go ahead, Michael.
Okay, perfect. So I will I'll move on to the second deck. So if we can load up the stage two presentation, then I'll walk you through that slide and give you an update on where we are with the stage two performance. So I'll just give staff a second to bring that up. So the first slide is just the May 2020 update. Slide two is just, we're going to start with Trillium Line in the south. Just to give you an overview of the work, the design and construction works that are happening on the Trillium Line. So on slide three, we're fairly advanced in a number of areas with the construction drawings, and that's really the last step in the process before everything is built. We're looking at the rail bridges along the south extension of the alignment, including the airport link, airport station itself, as well as a number of utility relocation plans on various structures along the south extension of the alignment and the airport link. If I go to slide four, final designs, so this is kind of a last check-in before we go to the construction drawings, still looking at the rail bridges throughout the alignment, vehicle elements. As you recall, we're getting seven additional Stadler vehicles, so we're looking at the car body layout, power pack and fuel tanks, a number of system onboard systems with that vehicle. Looking at a duct bank, so fiber connections and other things that are going along the alignment, and as well, we're looking at putting out drawings that detail the fiber optic relocations for the south extension. If I go to slide five, preliminary designs are still coming through. This is kind of the back end stuff, some of the stuff that's done last. So the track work and structures along the alignment, additional utility relocations, new walkway yard, which is kind of advancing nicely, and I'll show you some pictures in a second. Dalles Lake Tunnel, so a big task in this project is really to update that 1960s tunnel with the latest tunnel ventilation systems, cellular coverage, all the latest required fire standards and equipment in that facility to make sure we can do a bit of an upgrade during this period, and then also looking at all the communication systems for the new stations and the new buildings. So this is to make sure that the platforms have appropriate CCTV coverage, electronic signage, public address systems, all the things that we expect in a modern LRT station. If I go to slide six, slide six gives you a bit of an overview of the construction schedule. Obviously, with the shutting down of the existing Trillium line at the start of this month, everything is under construction. Transit Next is working in all areas of the system. So, you know, there's no stone unturned in terms of where work is happening. If I go to slide seven. This is a walkway maintenance facility. On the right-hand side, you see there's a bypass track. It's kind of a freshly laid track that was used for the last year for trains coming out of the old walkway yard to get to the main line. So that track is actually now being dismantled as they reorganize the layout of the new walkway yard. And you can see the walls of the building starting to come up out of the ground there at the maintenance facility. Trillium line on slide eight is characterized largely by a series of rail over road bridges as compared to Confed line, which is a lot of road bridges over rail. So Trillium line, a number of bridge structures in the south that are kind of very well advanced. Airport Parkway Rail Bridge is pier caps are in place. I saw a photo this morning that the MSCs, basically the retaining walls that go around that location are starting to be in place. We do get questions about whether we provision for parkway widening in this area, and we have. So there is an extra span that's being built now to make sure that we're ready for that widening when it happens. A series of other bridges that will give you I have some photos of that I'll show you in a second here. But all the bridges are progressing nicely. There's work in all areas. You kind of see they're starting with a caisson, so that's the foundation. The piers and columns coming out of the ground and the pier caps. And then later this summer, we should actually see the girders or the span that go across those piers being set in place. And so there'll be a series of overnight road closures to when they're ready to set those in place. So if I go to slide nine, you see the Airport Parkway Rail Bridge. So you see the three sets of columns there. The one on the far right-hand side of the picture is where the future widening of the Airport Parkway will go. Uplands Rail Bridge, so this is just a single-track structure that will go over Uplands Road on slide 10. It's coming along nicely and a little bit of utility relocation work to do in that area, but otherwise we're making good progress. The airport guideway, so we have some, on slide 11, some very strict timelines in terms of, you see on the far wall there of that, the airport building is a loading dock, and so we've got a strict schedule to get in and out of that spot. Currently, we've closed that road and closed the access to the loading dock, and so we've got a strict deadline later this fall to actually finish enough work so that we can get out of the way and reopen that loading dock for the airport operation. So that's but you see there's already four caissons kind of put into the ground, and there's additional work being done there actively as we speak. Some of the guideway sections, and so you don't often get, on slide 12, you don't often get a good view of these because they're kind of hidden away from the roadways, but you see making good progress in terms of the granular base ahead of putting down ballast and ahead of the track work that will go through this area. So good progress just in prepping the site there and prepping the ditches. Slide 13, Bowesville Road, the rail bridge over there is coming along nicely. We're seeing good progress. And then on slide 14, if you drive by this area, you'll see the large park and ride facility where the subgrade is ready and they're starting to do additional works along this area just in preparation for this end state. Line Bank, Line Bank is on slide 15, is an elevated station. So we're building a short elevated guideway to get to the elevated station on the one side of Line Bank that will carry across on Line Bank Road before dropping down to being at grade through to the Bowesville intersection. So just some upcoming work. I've got a couple more photos I'm going to show you on Trillium line. So as we shut down the existing Trillium line, obviously there's the handing over the vehicles to TNEX for maintenance, closing down the stations, putting up the appropriate fencing in different places. We have some rock excavation between Gladstone and Carling, which I'll show you in a second. On the next slide, the embankment construction, so the retaining walls are starting to go in place for the connection and the bridge across the Airport Parkway. And then guideway and station construction basically in all locations is progressing. So on slide 17, so I just want to show a photo. So this is of the existing Trillium Line looking north. So what you're looking at in the center there, the tracks, is that's the Gladstone siding or Gladstone passing track. And so that's historically where trains have slowed down or essentially had to stop as they passed each other. So the double tracking will go from the bridge all the way to Bayview Station, so the siding won't see any slow movements anymore. And then right abutting the bridge is going to be the new Gladstone Station. In order to put in the double tracking, in order to put in the the station with the redundant elevators on both sides and create a plaza, we are going to have to do some rock blasting starting in this area and trout going south. There has been some discussion. The property on the left that you see is pretty close to where the construction and the end state of the station is going to be. And so obviously we're going to work with that that the tenants there to make sure that their access is maintained. There's some access that opens out right onto the construction site. So we'll have to make some minor adjustments in that area to make sure their access is maintained. We turn around and look south, Gladstone in the foreground. You see the 417 in the background or the middle of the page there. So that's actually a rapid bridge replacement project that's underway. So the double tracking will continue here south until Beach Street, and then we're essentially going to have to do additional blasting the length of the track to make space for the double tracking. Under the 417, there's a series of retaining walls that need to be removed and structures that are falling apart. They're in a state of they're very old structures and they're not in great condition. So as part of once that bridge goes in, we need to get underneath there and do a bunch of cleanup work to enable the double tracking to go further south. So just some traffic mobility impacts. Obviously, the O-Train Trillium Line being shut down is we have a replacement bus service in place now. We have to get close to the Trillium Line for some of the rock excavation, and we just want to make sure that we have the appropriate safety protocols and setbacks for when that blasting is happening. And so there'll be some discussions with the ward councillors on how we do that. Some major work at Carlton in terms of upgrading the underpasses. So there's a series of things that are going to come up this summer, and we'll keep in close contact with council and the ward councillors on that work. So if I go to slide 20, we're going to move over to the east, and I'll provide an update on the design that's taking place in the east, as well as some of the construction activity. So I'm now on slide 21. So on the design side, we're seeing the construction drawings for a number of elements, utilities, culvert work at Greens Creek, but critically, Montreal Flyover Bridge and Montreal Road Highway Bridges 5 and 7. So these are bridges. I'll show you photos in a minute. The crux of the project in the east is really to get through this Montreal Road interchange, as well as get work done on the Greens Creek culvert. So the fact that they're now at construction phase with those drawings is good news. So I'll show you some photos of that work in a second. On slide 22, so some additional construction drawings, the utility expansion, drainage, and then some variable message signage that's going to go up on the 174. If I go to slide 23, final designs for trim, plast, Jeanne d'Arc stations, system communications, a variety of things happening there. The idea in the east is that all of this, on the current schedule, all of the stations would be under construction by the end of this year. So that's a key milestone that we're going to be watching for. In terms of works going ahead. Some preliminary designs that are taking place. So you see some of the, this essentially follows the construction sequencing, Montreal Station Bridge, one of the station itself, and the station bridge is kind of one of the key ones, pedestrian bridge over Greens Creek. And then you see all the systems that kind of have to come later, the traction power substation, the communications, train control, overhead catenary, track and guideway. So I'll go to slide 25. So slide 25 provides an overview of the timing of the construction. Obviously, we're essentially into construction everywhere along the east now. There's a few intermediate locations where there's not a lot of activity, but there will be activity in all locations by the end of the summer. So if I go to slide 26, this is kind of a bird's eye view of all the work that's happening at Montreal Interchange. And so you see the four quadrants. There's the activity in each of those quadrants as essentially we move, widen the clover leaf to get out of the way ahead of putting in additional bridges to be able to move the traffic, essentially widen the traffic out and create space in the middle of that interchange for Montreal Station on the Confederation Line. So a series of things happening there. This is kind of looking back that same interchange towards the city. You can kind of see in the foreground there's a couple of there's a drill rig and a crane there to put the caissons or the foundations in place for the bridge structures. If I go to slide 28, just a bit of a ground level view of what's happening there. So you see kind of a lot of mechanical equipment on the one side of the road. We did close the road and go down to do a traffic closure at this location. We didn't hear, I think the reduced traffic levels in general helped us get in there quickly with limited impact. And so they're trying to get in and out of there as quickly as possible. And in any event, by the end of the summer. If I go to slide 29, so this just, I tried to provide a graphic that just kind of gives you an overview of what's happening here. So where it says caissons, those are really just the foundations for the new bridges. So you see in green there on the left-hand side, and then you see the columns on the right-hand side and the yellow circles. Essentially what's going to happen is on the left-hand side, all those green dots, we're going to build a bridge, a road bridge to move the traffic off the existing structure onto that road bridge. So there'll be a shift on the one side where the green dots are, and then on the other side, just for reference, where the yellow dots are, there'll be a shift of traffic. Essentially, it creates space in the middle, and that existing structure will be demolished. So traffic, road traffic will be moved off of the existing structure onto a new road bridge structure to allow us to come in the middle and build the structure for the station. If I go to slide 30 now, this gives you, again, a bird's eye view of works that are happening. This is essentially between Blair Station and Montreal Road Interchange. So there's a lot of activity happening in this area, and it's not obvious what's happening there, but I will try to kind of explain it today just because it is a bit of a shift in strategy in terms of how we're managing traffic just in this short section. The next slide shows you a bit of at the ground level, kind of what's happening, gives you kind of a sense of the scale of the work. And then the next slide, just looking back, essentially the widening of the road that's being prepared. So if I go to, I'm on slide 33 now. Previously, when we talked about this section or the 174 in general, it was to do a widening on both sides of the highway to make space in the middle for the light rail system. In this section of the highway, we actually need to build a structure. You see it in the kind of the magenta there, or dark red color, a structure that cuts over from Blair Station, cuts over the 174, and then drops down into the middle of the highway. In order to build that structure, the contractors essentially optimized the lane shift to force all of the lanes to the one side where they're being expanded. And I'll show you that in a subsequent graph. But essentially what we're going to do is we're going to move all of the road traffic to one side of that structure to allow them to kind of work unfettered. We don't want to have any interactions from a construction point of view or safety point of view with road traffic underneath while that's being built. And so they want to move all the traffic out of the way, build the structure before they move it back in. Now, this has an advantage. I'll just go to slide 34 to kind of show you what they're going to be building. The sequence that they've chosen has the advantage of we're able to actually keep the bus transitway open for longer and have reduced impact on the bus transitway. So this is an image of the flyover structure that essentially will come across from Blair Station, and then it will drop down into the middle of the highway. If I go to slide 35, you see another look at it. So this is essentially the bent structure that needs to go over the highway. So we need to bring the tracks essentially from Blair Station across into the middle of the highway. While we do that, we're going to move all of this traffic over to the left-hand side of the image on page 35. We'll maintain the transitway because there's no conflict with that bus-only lane into Blair Station, but this is going to be a big shift in terms of the traffic. So if you go to slide 36, you actually see in blue there is where they're building the expansion. So they're actually adding the additional lanes of traffic to the one side. So all the regular road traffic and the bus traffic that's going in the eastbound direction will be moved to that side of the highway. And then you see the thin blue line at the top is where the bus-only lanes are going to be maintained for an extended period of time. We can actually maintain them for longer by using the strategy. If you go to slide 37, you see kind of the first shift where the eastbound traffic will actually move into those new lanes. So they'll be traveling on essentially a new highway roadbed. And if you go to slide 38, you see how in the green lines we've actually shifted the westbound traffic back over to one side of the highway. So this is really just between Blair and Montreal Road. We're going to implement this road strategy to for the traffic. So that's kind of a lot of information about the work that's happening in that location, but it kind of gives a good sense of what's happening there and why it's happening. If I go to slide 39 now, a series of kind of just some upcoming work. Again, we spoke about the Montreal interchange, a series of culvert extensions, utility work that are happening. So lots of work in kind of discrete locations before you start to see more of the linear work start later in the year. If I go to slide 40, that Montreal Road lane reduction really down to one lane through to September. The plan is to have that wrapped up and Montreal Road reinstated by Labor Day. And then the shift, the second thing there on that list there, Highway 174, a bit of a shift. It's really just the off-peak lane closures are going to happen, but we'll have that one shift between Blair and Montreal Road. And obviously, ahead of that, when we have a better sense of when that's going to take place, we'll come back to the group and provide an update. So that's the east. So if I go to slide 41, just a quick look at the map for the west, and then slide 42 to provide a design update. So a series of construction drawings, Stillwater Creek Bridge, which is over by the maintenance facility, Pinecrest Creek Culvert, some work there, and then the Sir John A. Macdonald Parkway detour. Again, that detour is required for construction of the cut-and-cover tunnel. I'll show you a photo of that in a second. Construction drawings, still kind of working through utilities, various bridge structures, bus operator facilities at Baseline Station, which are going to be very nice. Slide 44. Final design, so we're into kind of, you see a lot of utilities. We're starting to see some of the systems come through, traction power substations and different things, but it's progressing nicely through the design. Slide 45 talks about some of the preliminary work. Again, this is following the sequence of the construction, really, where you see some of the communication systems coming later, traction power coming later. We are seeing some of the kind of, I would say, more challenging items from a design point of view are the Connaught Tunnel, Pinecrest Open Trench, so where we're cutting from the highway back into the residential neighborhoods. There's a lot of work that needs to be done there just in terms of understanding the staging, understanding the design and the schedule and the impacts on the community. So as I move to slide 46, again, essentially a map of where construction is taking place and when it's taking place. And so everywhere save and except for that last section of a rock cut between Tunney's and Dominion is underway. So we're looking at doing that Scott Street detour in 2021, and at that point we would be under construction on all segments of the line. So just to give you on slide 47 some updates on some of the facilities. So this is a lot of work and activity has been happening over at Moody near Corkstown, adjacent to Corkstown Road in 417, just to prepare for that maintenance and storage facility. Again, this is a bit of a shot of what it's going to look like after the first kind of build-out is completed. We've provisioned for space in this facility to build out to support the Barhaven and Kanata extensions when those occur and the additional fleet count that will be required at that time. I go to slide 49, Iris Station. So this is actually a location where there's a lot of work happening. It's one of the kind of key locations in the West that needs to be completed. At this location, we're building a road bridge. So we're going to move the road traffic over over the tracks, and the Iris Station is going to be built at this location. A lot of work in this area. There'll be a lot of detours to kind of get the bus traffic and regular road traffic through this area. But the net result is that we'll have a great separated bridge, and which will be perfect for the train system. If you go to slide 50, Lincoln Fields. So just some shots of the utility works that wet utility works that are happening in this area, and having to relocate them to get to make space for where the tracks are coming. You can kind of see there's a little at the far, the top left-hand corner of that photo is where the tunnel is going to pop out from that area, and it will be essentially at grade through this area to a new Lincoln Field station. So a lot of work happening in this area, and we're going to start to see construction of a flyover just on the northern side of Carling shortly in the coming months. So some upcoming work. So still working on the parkway, Sir John A. McDonald temporary lane construction, doing some construction on the sidewalks, utility relocations, having to move some of the Hydro Ottawa lines out of the way, and as well as the telecommunications out of Byron Linear Park. So that's all happening. If I go to slide 52, I mentioned it already, a little bit of work on Lincoln Field flyover, Connaught Tunnel preparatory works, and then some additional works on the maintenance facility out in the west. On slide 53, just kind of an aerial view of the parkway realignment. Again, we're having to move the parkway closer to the shoreline. This is on slide 53, just to make space for the new cut-and-cover tunnel, which will essentially track a straight line right in the middle of the page on this image. If you go to slide 54, this shows you kind of get a sense of what the plan is, essentially to move the road out of the way, build the construction, and then you can move the road back away from the shoreline to create more space between the road and the shoreline. On slide 55, a couple of key areas that we're working on. Obviously, the Connaught Tunnel, Pinecrest Trench, it's kind of a critical path for us. And then the entire Parkway Tunnel we're working on. Just do a little bit of a close-up on slide 56 of the Connaught Tunnel. So the Connaught Tunnel, you see it's really coming from a flyover in the top right of that photo, the red images, that there's the split between the train traffic that will go to Baseline and the traffic that will go to Moody. And then doing a cut-and-cover tunnel that drops right in through a residential community behind a OC Transco bus facility, and then is sliced in between essentially a series of industrial buildings and the highway. So this is a tight spot for us. We did have to make we asked the contractor to make some adjustments working with OC Transco to use the OC Transco facility as a bus route or a truck route. Trying to get essentially out of the residential communities as quickly as possible and onto the main streets. And so there's going to be some additional work required through this area to assess how the contractor can avoid using the residential side streets and how they can kind of quickly get in and out of the area with any haul routes that they need. So if I go to slide 57, you see kind of a series of traffic and mobility impacts, the Sir John A. McDonald Parkway, which I spoke about. Some work on Richmond Road that's happening starting now and then through to the end of the project. Carling Avenue, we're going to start doing some work on Lincoln Fields, and that's going to have potentially some impacts on the bus routing through that area. Iris Street and over by Baseline, there's already works underway. And then obviously Moody, the 417, there's a bit of stuff happening through that area, which will, again, off-peak closures, trying to work around community and traffic needs as much as possible. But obviously, it is coming, and the project is kind of working in all corners of the city at this point. So that's the infrastructure. So I just want to go back, touch briefly on Stage 2 vehicles. Obviously, there's two orders of vehicles that are out on the street right now that are being built, 38 Stage 2 Alstom Citadis vehicles on slide 58. So two of them have already been accepted and are now in service and available for use. Two more are close, so they're finished and just going through final acceptance testing. There's a number of hours they need to run fault-free before we add them to the fleet, but we're expecting two additional vehicles in the next 6 to 8 weeks. So that's the Alstom Citadis vehicles that everyone is very familiar with. On slide 59, I go to just an image of the Stadler FLIRT vehicle. So this is kind of the exterior graphics that have been finalized. So we're just working through that with Stadler. These vehicles are being built in Switzerland. Just have a, you know, have a look at the on slide 60, a bit of the interior work that's happening, planning and design. So trying to make it consistent with the existing fleet. You see some layout activities, so service planning at OC Transpo, and my team is working with Stadler to finalize the design and make sure it meets everyone's needs. So this vehicle, obviously characterized by the additional doors and easier redundant door access to get to those multi-use areas. On slide 61, the other thing that has been happening in parallel, we've been working a lot with the area councillors on, is the connectivity studies. Obviously, all the planning and design has been helping us with this. We essentially moved through the eastern connectivity studies. We've had a series of public consultations and technical consultations. We're now working through the southern connections, and we're getting good questions and good feedback from the public on that. So I encourage those emails to continue to get as much clarification, and we get, we optimize the outcomes for this for the connectivity to these new stations. Some of the things, we are not able to do everything in our scope, and so we are taking all ideas and passing any ones that we're not able to implement along to transportation planning for inclusion in the transportation master plan update. Slide 62, prior to COVID, we were doing a lot of kind of open house formats where we were bringing people into recreation centers and other locations. Obviously, we've moved to all digital format, all virtual. The team did an excellent job of running some virtual consultations on the connectivity piece. Those went very well. I think there was a lot of support for continuing that format and getting the information. We're still trying to provide as much information about the project as we can, and so if there's specific requests, please, happy to take those into our office. We are doing the quarterly updates. We are doing a biweekly update to councillors, and there are now regular newsletters going out and email distribution lists for the community. So feel free to look for those and to ask for additional information if you need it. We have a team that's dedicated to providing that information and happy to share. So, slide 63, I would just end on a little bit the theme. We have throughout all of the activity over the last 8 to 10 weeks, we have been working closely with the contractors on the impacts of COVID on the project works. I think, in some sense, we've been fortunate because we're at the stage of the project where it's a lot of kind of outdoor work, grading equipment, individuals and individual pieces of equipment. If we were farther along, if we were into station builds, we were installing communications equipment and other things like that, there would be more of a significant impact. So all the contractors on all the projects, including stage one with RTG, they've been, implementing COVID measures to keep their staff safe, additional cleaning measures on the stage one vehicles to keep those safe as well, doing as much as we can to kind of take advantage of the low traffic and get ahead of some work, but also being mindful of the restrictions and the impacts on supply chain to the two projects. So, with that, I'll just move to slide 64. And Mr. Mayor, we'd be happy to take questions from John and myself on the project.
Okay, thank you very much. Very thorough presentation. We'll go back to our list. Councillor Hubley, please. Councillor Hubley.
Okay. Sorry, Mr. Mayor. Sorry, I had the mute button on. My apologies. I'd like to start, if I could. I'm just trying to find it here. We have some questions from Transit Commissioner Caracato that he's looking for some answers on, and it's part of that presentation. So if you don't mind, I'd like to ask these questions, and staff can take it as direction towards the June 1st meeting if they can't provide the answer today. One of the questions is, other than a loss of the fare revenues and the reduced ridership and those sort of issues, has any issues that the bus drivers themselves have observed been reported since March 16th when we started the rear door boarding and other safety measures?
Just push your mute button.
So the I can't speak in particular to the bus situation. I don't, John, did you have any feedback, or do we want to just take that offline to the Transit Commission meeting?
Chair, did you want an answer at this meeting, or would you like...
That's what I said at the outset, is if you can't answer at this moment, we did commit to Commissioner Caricato to put his questions out today with the understanding that, like that one in particular, it may be better as a direction to you to ensure that that kind of information is provided at the June 1st meeting. So if that's, we can all agree to that, that's great. I'll move to the second one. Given the anticipated requirement to continue some level of social distancing for the foreseeable future, what, if anything, is OC Transport doing now to plan for the eventual return to the pandemic ridership levels, more specifically overcrowding on the platforms and the buses and the trains themselves? And so, again, Mr. Manconi, I believe that's going to be part of your presentation on June 1st, and we're not at a point today where we can actually provide those answers. Would that be correct?
That's correct, Chair, and as the city manager indicated, we have been doing an extensive amount of work, that work includes, I'm on the North America panel for Recovery of Service and also the Canadian panel, and so we're bringing all those best practices, including researches from Johns Hopkins University and so forth, at the Transit Commission Recovery Plan.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Manconi. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Great, thanks, Councillor. Councillor Dudas, please.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor. I wanted to ask, in regards to the work that's being done with RTG, what is staff level of confidence in the plan and the work that has been done to date? You mentioned timelines and some concerns that they push far out into 2020 and that you're looking to have them a little bit closer to the end of summer. But overall, what is your level of confidence in terms of them being able to accomplish what we need them to do?
So, Mr. Mayor, the analysis that we've done with our technical experts, and there's been many, and the various discussions we've had with the CEOs, I know the mayor and the chair, the vice chair, the city manager, myself, others have had technical meetings, commercial meetings, all sorts of discussions. From my perspective, can be distilled down to two concerns, and they're major concerns. Because it's what everyone, certainly in this meeting and the public, wants to know is when will service be delivered in accordance with the project agreement consistently and reliably. And RTG cannot provide that date. And what they have said verbally, when pressed for a date, is the end of the year. And both at the staff level and at the political level and at the city manager level, we have said that is not acceptable. We cannot have our community waiting to the end of the year for consistent, reliable service. So they've endeavored to come back to us and see what a plan would look like if they could achieve end of August. We have not heard back from them. That's issue number one. And issue number two, to be blunt and candid, is the continued concern about the vehicles and Alstom's commercial interface with the consortium, which is theirs to manage. It is not the city's. We do not own the contract with Alstom. We, again, have been clear both at the staff and at the political level that RTG needs to manage Alstom, and their disputes are their disputes. The city bought a contract with RTG and RTM, and as you can tell by Michael's presentation, give credit where credit is due. RTG and RTM have identified all of the issues. Michael and his team did an excellent job of vetting a long list of issues. That's been distilled down to the seven key things that gets that reliability up. And the vehicles are at the forefront of that. And Alstom and RTG need to deliver on the vehicle retrofits. Yes, COVID is there. They're not immune to that. But they're world-class organizations. That's what they presented themselves as. We believe they have the expertise, the knowledge. They need to have the will, and they need to push every commercial lever they have to get those vehicles rectified and get service up and running by the end of the summer, because as you're going to be hearing at the Transit Commission meeting, we have a restoration plan that depends on rail. So if I were to summarize it, it's two things. Okay. It's the timeline and getting Alstom, which is RTG's contract to manage, at the table, bring their world expertise, their world resources, be innovative, and deliver.
Okay. Thank you, John, for being candid in that respect. I wish you would have said you had utmost confidence in it, but I know we're not at that point yet, and I appreciate that staff are holding them to account. I have a question in respect to the Stage 2 presentation and reflecting the East End changes to the Montreal Road to Highway 117. So my question was, this seems like this is a change from what was initially assumed would be traffic impacts and the amount of construction that was going to have to impact that stretch of road. Is this going to be completed by the end of the summer? I understand that's the timeline. What are the communications that are going to be in place to residents who are going to be traveling that stretch? It's already a very tight area around the split in terms of congestion and impacts.
Michael?
Yep. So I guess that area, yeah, I mean, they have full flexibility to make changes like this, to move the traffic to one side of the, essentially the median, in order to kind of give them a better access to do the work in the middle of the road. I think that, you know, probably as a takeaway, there is a significant upside in terms of their ability to accelerate the work and have fewer impacts on the road underneath. And so I will take away to kind of give you that information. In terms of the road impacts and the traffic impacts, we think because they're maintaining the same kind of number of lanes, the same facility, we think that it's going to, you know, it's a reasonable approach. We like the fact that they're able to kind of work on that structure unimpeded without having concerns about traffic safety underneath. So I think it's the safest approach because they're providing the same number of lanes. I think that is a huge upside in terms of kind of minimizing the impact. We do owe you a kind of a timeline of when the shift is going to take place. Obviously, you can see the work, and it's under full construction, but we'd have to get back to you with the timeline and then the timeline on the communications on when that's actually going to take place.
Okay, so maybe what I'll do is I'll direct that, or I'll ask that you provide an update to myself, Councillor Tierney, and Councillor Luloff as to impacts, so we can work with you on that. And my last thought was I just wanted to commend your staff on their virtual consultations in terms of the connectivity to the East stations. They were very well attended and well thought out, and I think it was a very big success. So just a round of applause on that front. That's it for me. Thank you.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Councillor. Councillor Anglai, please.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mayor, and thanks for the presentation. I'm going to take a quick opportunity before I ask my question, because I don't sit on transit, just to say a huge thank you, John, if you could pass it on to the operators, the mechanics, the people who clean the buses, everything for keeping the service going and giving a way for our frontline workers to get to and from their jobs. I know it's a huge pressure on the people who do this, on their families, and I just want you to know that work is very, very much appreciated. So if you could pass that on.
I will. Thank you.
In terms, John, of the we heard that, you know, at the management level, you're not satisfied with the lack of a specific date. You're still waiting to hear back whether it can be in place by the end of summer. Are there any other levers that we have in the contract that can be applied? We gave notice. They responded to the notice. The notice response that we got, you're not satisfied with. You're satisfied that they ticked off all the boxes in terms of what the concerns are around the operation of the system, but we're not satisfied with their plan as to how to move it forward and the timeline. So there was a process to launch the complaint, if you will. Are there any levers that you can put into place to push them to give us the dates or to finish the work within a fixed period of time?
We are using all the levers, and it is having an impact on them because we hear from them all the time in terms of requests for cash flow and things like that. And you've seen our updates. We've been diligent. We only pay them, as Mr. Kanalakis says, we only pay them when we're entitled and required to pay them. And we go through the project agreement through processes. We do have other tools in the toolbox to do other contractual things, which we are reviewing with our entire team, including the external lawyers and Ms. Vogel and so forth. And we will provide updates if we do go into any of those spaces at future updates, like we did in camera in the past, in terms of where we would go if we choose to use any of those tools. Right now, we have asked those CEOs to get back to us. The mayor put that forward, that request, along with the chair and the vice chair, that we want this wrapped up by the end of August. The ball is in their court to get back to us on that. And we have we continue to be at the table to help them on any technical thing. And to show you how far we've gone, we've even offered them a full month shutdown if they need to. We need to leverage this time that ridership is down, because we need to move to recovery and to a good, stable service.
So that leads to my next question. You said that you have a restoration plan, and you've also flagged that you would like the work done by the end of summer. So I'm assuming the two are connected. Does your restoration plan, and maybe you can't answer this today, and maybe it's more appropriate for Transit Commission, and if so, just file it away and maybe you can speak to it at Transit, but does your restoration plan rely upon full service? And by that, I mean, how many trains will you need in service, keeping in mind that in all likelihood, if this starts back up in August, the system starts back up in August in earnest, that you're not going to have sort of peak ridership to start with, and probably not for some time after that. So can you speak to that, or is that more appropriate for the Transit Commission?
It's more appropriate for the Transit Commission. We're doing some final sign-offs, including with Dr. Etches, and we'll have all that in there. But irrespective of the mode, I'll say this. You want as many vehicles as possible so that you can either do social distancing or do other measures that we'll be announcing at the Transit Commission. So whether it's rail or whether it's got rubber tires, we want as many vehicles out there as possible.
Okay, appreciate that. Thank you, John.
Okay.
Right. Thank you, Councillor. Councillor DeRouze, please.
Mr. Mayor, I have a very good question. I just want to thank, of course, Michael and his group, and I want to echo Councillor Dudas that they did a great presentation virtually also in the South End. So that's our way. I have a quick general question. I know that you've put the timeline and you explained the spring and summer, but Mr. Morgan, that do you look at the whole project overall? Do you think that COVID is impacting some timeline, and do we have to really rethink, or that are we behind schedule on any of those major infrastructure? Because we know that you cannot assess it maybe now, and we don't know what's going to happen in the future, but are we really having a plan B in case COVID hopefully will never come back again or have a second wave? There is any plan and preparation for that?
Yes. So we've been working closely with the three project teams to understand, what changes they need to make, whether is it resequencing or is it impacts on supply chain, for example, working with them to make sure that they assess, if they're trying to get parts from a jurisdiction that's closed because of COVID, but there's an alternate jurisdiction that's open, working with them to mitigate any of those issues. I think we have a few kind of key checkpoints. On the Trillium line, there's some internal deadlines related to restoring the track to do deliveries to the National Research Council testing facility. And we've got some deadlines related to the airport loading dock, in the fall. I think we will know kind of at that time what, how they're doing on those kind of intermediate deadlines and understanding what impact that has on kind of the end game. Obviously, what I've said in the past is I need to see those vehicles, the Stadler vehicles, arrive on site in 2021. That's going to be kind of a game changer if those are impacted. Obviously, those are coming from Europe. So, some early concerns there, but nothing definitive that I can kind of point to. On the Confederation line, we know a number of vehicles are coming out of the Brampton facility. Those vehicles are late today. There's no question that they're already late. For for stage two, but we have a bit of runway ahead of us to get those stage two, the Alstom vehicles ready. The Brampton facility did close down, I believe temporarily, essentially to allow them to retool and rework the assembly stations. So we need to kind of work closely with Rio Trans Group and make sure that those Alstom deliveries are meet our needs in terms of the stage two project. The construction, the infrastructure, we've seen some impacts there, and some supply chain issues, but nothing that we're able to kind of measure today. It probably, will take us to the end of the year to see what if any, impacts or long-term effects on the project schedule there may come as a result of the COVID.
Thank you. This is very helpful. I just like, I know that you're going to keep us, maybe there is more updates to come in the future. Maybe if you can ask you, I don't want to put directions or something. I think just in the future when you give us presentation, if there is a delay, can you make sure you advise council and let us know that these delays based on the COVID, so we understand, we distinguish if there is delay based on the project from the timeline or there is some circumstances that COVID forced it on us, so be able to basically there is a delay, so we understand right. That. I really appreciate it. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. That's all I have.
Great. Thanks, Councillor Drews. Councillor Harder.
Yeah, thanks, Mayor. I thought that was a... What is that noise? I thought that was a great presentation. I got a lot of information, and I look forward to the updates that with the few pieces that the questions have been asked already from the Transit Commission on June the 1st, I think that I heard that is. So thank you very much.
Great. Thanks, Councillor. Councillor Moffat.
Thank you all. I don't have any questions.
Councillor Menard, please.
Thanks very much, Mayor. Just a couple of questions. Thank you for the presentation. You mentioned more shutdowns of LRT Line 1 during the summer. Can you be clear about what staff are thinking at this point, how long, and when?
Yeah, we want to use kind of the information. We want to kind of do an assessment of how much work we're able to complete in this five-day shutdown.
On schedule with everything that we needed there.
Okay, and then are we on schedule for the north-south work? I know the Stadler vehicles is a separate piece completely, but on the north-south work we've already started, is that currently on schedule in terms of work being conducted there related to COVID?
As I mentioned to Councillor DeRuz, you know, there's some impacts, I think some intermediate deadlines that we need to monitor to make sure that, for example, that access to the NRC facilities kind of reinstated in time, access to the airport loading dock. So those kind of two intermediate things that we really need to watch in terms of the COVID impacts. We know that there was some supply chain issues with different elements of the rail bridges, but we don't, because we're still, you know, we're only 8 weeks into it, we don't know when manufacturing of those elements start up. Is there going to be a backlog? Are we going to be impacted by that backlog? Are those same teams going to be, the same manufacturing facilities able to kind of catch up, so to speak? So, for example, during the COVID, early days in the COVID, we know that there's a couple of facilities that manufactured retaining walls or MSE walls, that closed. And so both teams on the Confed and on the North-South were kind of indicating that that was a concern for them. Now, that being said, we did see kind of both teams receive shipments of those panels in the last week or so. And so I think that's kind of a good early indicator that there may not be a massive backlog in some of these things. But, you know, like there's with so many kind of transit projects on the go and so much demand for rebar and other things, I think as we open up, as the manufacturing sector opens up, we'll have to kind of take a hard look at that in the coming months to see if there are any long-term impacts or if they're able to kind of catch up in the short term.
Okay, thanks very much.
Thanks, Councillor. Councillor King.
Thank you, Your Worship. I just have one quick question in regards to Stage 1 LRT. It's obviously good that the notice of default still exists under until all reliability issues are resolved, especially all those issues that emerged in the winter. Of course, mitigating those issues are of high priority, but what about potential summer issues, including rail stressing? Have we received guidance, information, or any data on what preventative and proactive action RTG is taking for rail issues or RTM is taking for rail issues that could emerge due to hot summer weather?
As part of this recent shutdown and the rectification plan, they have given us an indication that they want to do some additional rail welding, and so I believe that started during the five-day shutdown. I don't know if they're completed, to essentially take some metal out of the rail, and that helps to mitigate the potential for rail kinks during the hot summer. Actively working on, I would say, the track side of things to make sure that we don't suffer any issues during the hot temperatures. Now, they've indicated they need to come back in the fall and deal with the deal with the issue ahead of winter. And so, you know, we're not quite there in terms of having a stable solution that will last for the long term. So they have been, but they are actively looking at the track to make sure that we're not getting the kinking issues that we see on both lines during the hot summer months. And then the other one is really just making sure that they get ahead of the cooling on the trains, you know, cooling for the driver's cab, which is kind of a pretty, you know, self-contained enclosure that's, you know, facing the sun. It can warm up quite a bit, and wanting to make sure that we maintain the conditions of those trains appropriately for our drivers, and then obviously the passenger areas as well. The passenger areas have the benefit of the full HVAC system, wanting to make sure that that's working so that we're not taking vehicles out of service because they're so-called hot cars. So they're actively working on those two things, one on the track to make sure the track's good, and then on the vehicles as well to make sure the cooling system is working.
Thank you.
Great, thank you. Councillor Brockington, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So for Phase 1, are all costs for the repairs borne by RTG? City's not paying for anything?
Correct.
How do you test a switch heater in the month of May?
Yeah, you can't test it under the winter conditions, but I think that what they've been doing, the modifications they've been doing, has been to add insulation to the ductwork that on the heaters. They're revisiting the controls on the heaters to make sure that the control system and the monitoring of the correct operation is working correctly. But we're also working just to push them to simply just add more heat. We don't want them just to tinker with what's there and
it's just about insulation, it's just about switchgear controls. We physically want them to bring in more power to the locations, bring in more heaters, essentially double up on the heating systems at those locations to ensure that we don't have problems, come winter. You know, like what we've essentially said is that they need to double down on the amount of heat that they produce at some of these key switch locations.
But we ultimately won't know until we have basically have winter conditions. Is that correct?
Yeah, correct. Yeah, I mean, we can do some kind of, we can look at other systems and get a sense of how much heat is used at other locations to say, to kind of rationalize the solution. But the true test is winter.
On, again, phase one, the seven main issues that we've identified for them, and you outlined that work is ongoing, and the frustration with a lack of a concrete timeline, like, you know, doesn't appear to be a deadline or a concrete timeline to get this work done. I think that's the frustrating part for us is we know what the issues are. They should be able to say, all right, we have a plan. It's going to take X number of days or weeks per issue to get it done, test it, voila, we're done. You're thinking best case scenario, August. I just want to be confirmed on these dates. And again, what is our recourse should they not be able to deliver?
Yeah, so Mr. Mayor, I'll take that one if I can. We have to remember, they're not our dates. They own the fix. And what we have told them is we are not going into the fall with more of these reliability issues.
Right.
And they verbally said, because it was not included in their plan, the end of the year, to which our immediate reaction was absolutely not.
Right.
Now, they're now currently telling us that they would love to fix it sooner because, let's be very candid, the sooner they fix it, the more the reliability goes up. They get their monthly payment, and things just get better for them and for us. So I have to believe that they want to get this fixed. I'm not challenging them that they don't want to get it fixed. The question is can they get it fixed? Do they have the components, the parts? And there's some critical components, such as the CVS, which Michael spoke about, that there is a supply shortage of those and so forth. But again, we don't own that. That's theirs to figure out. And so I don't want anybody to leave with the impression that we as staff are saying we believe they can get it done by the end of August. We are saying we're not prepared to go into the fall with these issues. We have to restore service. Our customers have been through enough. You've been through enough. And quite frankly, staff has been through enough too. So it's not a date that we have mapped out. We have said, no, we're not getting to the fall. So figure it out. And they have said, well, we'll let you know whether or not we can. So we wait for that information. We will update you when we get that.
Okay. Just on phase two, with the airport canceling a number of their capital projects, is their funding for the airport station at all in jeopardy?
Councillor, I can't. I don't have an answer for you on that right now. You know, it's something that we could discuss with the airport authority, but we haven't received any indication that they would not be going ahead or that there would be a change.
Okay. And just on page 8, your rail bridges update, there was no mention about the new bridge over the Via Rail tracks just south of Mooney's Bay Station or the new pedestrian bridge over the Rideau River. Not today, but can I get – I still haven't been briefed on the design of that pedestrian bridge, and I just wanted – to get more information in that regard. Can we set up a time?
I'll have to check with the team to see what the status of that design is, to know when it's coming through. And then I can reach out to your office and we can organize a time to go through that.
Okay, thanks for the update.
Great, thanks, Councillor. Councillor Gower, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I had a question, but it has been answered from one of my previous councillors, so I'll pass for now. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Councillor McKinney?
Hi. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Yes, I do have a question and just a quick comment. I do look forward to – I don't have any questions on phase one, but I do look forward to the June update on the corrective action plan. I think that it's important that –
you know, that we get clear timelines and certainly understand how the Alstom contract is managed through RTM, because it is concerning. I get that it's their problem, but it becomes ours, of course, when things are not operating well. So I do look forward to June. Thank you for the update today. My question is on phase two, in particular, Gladstone Station. I was briefed on the new design for Gladstone Station, and there was some question around capacity. And my understanding from staff was that the numbers that have been used to determine capacity at Gladstone Station did not include the updated numbers from our ongoing secondary plan in that area that's going to add really thousands of new units into that area. So I just wanted to, A, get that on record that there is a concern, and just try to understand from you how we can ensure that there will be the capacity required at Gladstone Station to handle what will be, in the near future, quite a large number of riders going through that that area.
So we can kind of go and review that to ensure the capacity issue is not going to be. I mean, I think it's really about the technical question would be, are you getting enough depth on the platform itself? In the sense that you're going to get the 80-meter platform that takes the longer train, and you are getting actually a double platform at that location. So whereas at Carling, there's only a single platform for the north and south mm-hmm. traffic. Gladstone, you're getting the two platforms, so automatically you kind of split your traffic, pedestrian, foot rider traffic, and then you will have the full length. And so be a check-in on the depth of the platforms and how they're doing that calculation. And I'd have to check back with my station's team just on the minimum depth that will be provided at that location. And then we can use that to kind of cross-compare with the ridership projections and just kind of do a couple of scenarios to see current and future projections, how that all maps out.
Okay. And that future projection then would include the numbers that are included what we're expecting through the secondary plan, the CDP in that area, is that correct?
We have to calibrate with Vivi and the transportation planning team a little bit just to make sure, all these numbers are in flux a little bit right now, but we would use whatever current numbers we have.
Okay, but I guess that's my issue is that the current numbers would not provide sufficient capacity in for the future of that station. I just want to make sure, unlike Bayview Station, where, we found out too late that it didn't hold the capacity, say, for interprovincial traffic, transit from the other side of the river. I just want to make sure that Gladstone is being built to the, with the capacity that's required for the future. And then what will probably be the near future, right?
Yeah. Okay, we're happy to review that and happy to kind of give you an updated assessment on that.
Okay, I'll look forward to that. Thank you. That's all the questions I have for today.
Okay, thanks, Councillor McKinney. Councillor El-Shantiri, please.
Thank you. Thank you, Your Worship. My question to Mr. Manconi, I'm interested, John, to know what confidence you have in the RTG will get everything done by the end of this summer?
It's a great question. I don't have what I need from them to understand if they can achieve that by the end of the summer. And the biggest wild card is Alstom and the resource levels required to do those fixes on those vehicles. I'm not in those commercial meetings. We don't want to be in those commercial meetings between them and Alstom. And so I don't have line of sight of that. And that's why we've pressed them for a response back. And we went right to the CEOs of those three organizations, ACS, Dragados, LS Dawn and SNC-Lavalin, and we told them get answers, get Alstom, and I know the mayor has been very open to him personally calling Alstom's CEO again, but we are waiting to hear back from those the consortium CEOs because they own that contract with Alstom.
So I'm trying to understand, though. I know we give the notice, and I know the mayor's effort, and I know all your effort, but you personally, do you have the confidence, or can you share with how much confidence you have all these issues going to be done during the summer, so when fall comes in, we don't start having them?
I'll give you what we have high level of confidence on. The good news that we're seeing on some of the engineering reports is that on the civil components, so the track and the catenary and those things, there are no major design flaws. And that's been brought in by experts from around the world that have spent, you know, hours looking at things like the catenary and so forth. I had a very frank discussion with the CEO, Peter Lausch. So the good news is, you know, the catenary and all those things appear to be maintenance-related or lack of maintenance and can be fixed. The elephant in the room is the vehicle. Counselor, I wish I could give you a percentage of confidence. I don't want to do that. The city, yourselves, and staff have been through enough, and I think I would just be guessing at this point.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much, and thank you for all your effort, John. You and your team, really appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Councillor.
Okay, thank you, Councillor. Councillor Cavanaugh, please.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Mayor. You can certainly appreciate the massive scale of the project in these presentations. This is about stage two, and it's very, very big. And most of it is about construction right now. So a lot of Ottawa is a construction site to deal with this. And I certainly know about that in my ward, and we had a lot already. And I want to thank Mr. Morgan in terms of dealing with an issue where we were given almost no notice of 60 trucks a day going up and down residential streets to take out dirt, et cetera, starting on the Connaught Tunnel. It was a bit of a shocker, and I appreciate the efforts of himself and Mr. Manconi in rerouting those trucks through the depot at the far end of Connaught. And taking them off the streets for now. This is something that's probably not appearing in as many neighborhoods because other neighborhoods, you can see that most of the construction is along the sides of a highway, et cetera, but this is going up and down residential streets. So I'm going to ask if we can work together to minimize the impact of this because obviously the train is, you know, the construction is moving forward, but these are residential streets, and we need to keep it in check as much as possible. So can I have the commitment to work with the community on this?
Absolutely.
Okay, thank you. And I appreciate you getting back to me even back and forth on the weekend because it was quite the impact. We should have learned a lot from stage one, and I'm asking, are the vehicles in stage two going to be better in terms of, for example, the COVID-19? Are we looking at adapting the trains more that could be helpful as we look forward in terms of people's apprehension to be near others, et cetera? What improvements have we made on that?
So there's the, I guess just in terms of the technical improvements, you know, we have the, you know, we've identified on that list that I provided, you know, there's five things that are all vehicle related, maybe even one of them that's vehicle and infrastructure related. So all those fixes are going into the new vehicles. Otherwise, the design at this point wouldn't be changing. We're looking to ensure all the modifications, improvements, enhancements are included, and then focused on the schedule, getting those vehicles here so we can test them. But that would, I would say, be the extent of there's no additional changes above and beyond, you know, the base design that we're planning at this time.
Thank you. Is the testing criteria updated for stage two as well?
The testing criteria for stage two is a little bit different because the split. So in stage one, when we did testing, we did test and commissioning. It was kind of a black box. So RTG was responsible for everything, for the entire infrastructure, for the vehicles, for the control room. Everything was with them, so they needed to demonstrate that everything was working. So when we do the stage two testing and commissioning program, the city will be, through RTG, will be providing vehicles, and the East-West Connectors Consortium will be providing infrastructure. And so there's a slightly different approach to how you measure success in stage two, East-West Connectors, we're really measuring them against the infrastructure and making sure that the infrastructure is working correctly, whereas we're relying on the vehicles that we already have in hand to work correctly during that period. Now, those details, the testing and commissioning details, we're working on releasing those. We're right now, the documents are going through, they're doing some accessibility edits so that they're available in multiple formats. So we're doing that process now. And then we expect to, next month sometime, post those criteria so people have them. They have a sense of them ahead of time. So that's for Confed line. And then on Trillium line, the testing commissioning, it's back to that black box a little bit. So there'll be the criteria and there'll be the approach. On both projects, we've expanded the testing commissioning, the trial running period to 3 weeks instead of 12 days. So there's been some edits and some kind of adjustments to make sure that, we learn from stage one and we improve in the contract for stage two.
Okay, thank you. Another part of this whole system going through is what happens around in terms of the connectivity to the stations. And one of the concerns of the communities is the paths. We call them multi-use paths, but they're the way to get to the station. And what we haven't got confirmation of is if they're going to be winter maintained, if there's going to be lighting. And I realize the complication with the fact that it's NCC lands as well, but this is crucial for people to get to the station. Otherwise, we're building a station that people are reluctant to walk to, particularly women walking at night. I've had people doing surveys of this, and there's a lot of concern on those kinds of issues. Can we see some cooperation on the connectivity to make it as accessible as possible?
Absolutely. We've been obviously been doing the connectivity studies with all the kind of different areas of the project and working through those. And the West is part of kind of the final tranche of studies and reviews that we want to do. As you mentioned, there's kind of a scope split there with some access to the stations. Lincoln Fields being the example is through NCC lands, and so it's a multi-use pathway on their land. There's also obviously a discussion that we should have to bring transportation planning into the mix in terms of the designation of the routes that are going to be winter maintained or the designation of the routes that will be lit and winter maintained, because that's a kind of a policy decision that affects some other departments. And so that requires some kind of coordination internally, but we should definitely, as part of the connectivity studies and the identification of the key MUPs to access the stations, we should be having that conversation so that when the MUPs get turned on a few years from now, there's absolute clarity on which ones are going to be winter maintained and which ones are lit and all those kind of finer details.
Can I get a commitment to work with the communities on this? Because this is probably one of their biggest concerns in terms of that green space, for example, around Connaught, where there's paths listed and it's not clear if they're going to be lit, if they're going to be winter maintained, and it makes all the difference in terms of their usability.
Yeah, no, absolutely. We absolutely can add that to the agenda for the consultations and the review with the public and the residents on those connectivity studies.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Councillor. Councillor Suds.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you very much for the presentation. Certainly very helpful, and I look forward to the discussion at Transit Commission. No questions for now. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Councillor. Councillor Meehan.
Thank you very much, Mayor. I do have a couple of questions. The first one is, Mr. Manconi, is JBA still here consulting with RTG?
So JBA has been confirmed that they were brought in to help out with the development of the plan, and Mr. Lausch has confirmed with me that he is keeping JBA engaged. I do not know the scope of work, obviously, because I'm not privy to that, but they were brought in, particularly after we pushed back on the first draft version.
So they're consulting, but we don't know if, in fact, they're here overseeing any of the work.
They're working remotely from overseas. They've been doing work on the plan, the rectification plan, but they're not here physically, no. Not yet.
Does that concern you? Does that concern you that we don't have that expertise on the ground here?
No, because I don't. The big focus that, again, in speaking with Peter Lausch, is that JBA's real focus is on the vehicles, which is the most complicated fix. The catenary systems and the switches and so forth and the mechanisms, that's predominantly SNC-Lavalin. And I personally met those engineers pre-COVID, and I know they were on the ground. Not only were they on the ground, but they had a lot of instrumentation that I know Mr. Kanalakis toured the maintenance yard with me. They had instrumentation that they brought in, and they're some of the best in the field. So, again, give credit when credit is due. Mr. Lausch has brought in some good expertise on those assets. Mr. Boyle's predominant focus, and that's up to Peter to sort out, is on the vehicles. When I hear he's engaged on the vehicles, that's great because his team has worked on just about every vehicle in the marketplace.
But you did touch on the vehicles as being one of your big concerns, though. So they're not here when they're retrofitting those trains, when they're pulled in, like the seven trains that are in for maintenance all the time and retrofitting. They're not working in with lockstep with the people, the repair team, I guess.
I don't have line of sight on that. I don't know if they could be doing virtual camera feeds and so forth. So I don't want to say no. I don't want to speak on behalf of RTG. That's part of the due diligence that we've asked for. They're engaged, and you know that was a positive thing that we wanted to hear. But they could be inspecting remotely. There's a lot of innovation that's going on across the world in terms of how people are doing this stuff.
Okay. Given that your major concern is the vehicle, we're buying even more of these vehicles. Is there any point we can replace what we've got with a tried and true vehicle? Is there any plan or anybody looking at that so that we don't have to go through this retrofitting trains that obviously have big problems?
So what you would hear from Mr. Boyle, because he shared that with me and with the city manager and others, everything on these trains is fixable, and Alstom does build good quality trains, and I can tell you that around the world, many, many train sets, particularly new builds, go through a difficult transition implementation phase of defects and so forth. The issues here that sets it apart, based now that we've got the rectification plan, is that there was issues that caused the major breakdowns. The good news, it's all fixable. For example, there's a defective component on the roof of the vehicles that was assembled at their sub-supplier level incorrectly. They're replacing all those. It's an easy fix. It's just about getting the materials and getting the time on the vehicles and getting it done. Everything that we have seen is fixable. Mr. Boyle has told us that himself. Peter Lausch has told us that. Alstom has told us that. So getting into a very complex space of get different vehicles may seem easy. It's not. You have to look at the control systems. You have to look at the configuration, the doors, the platforms, all that. The best path for our city, for us, for you as council, is to get Alstom to fix these vehicles with RTG and get them reliable. And they will get there. It's a question of time. There's nobody saying they won't get there. Nobody has signaled to me or to anybody on my team that they have seen anything that's not fixable.
It's just if it's within our requirements, that's the problem, okay? When we closed down the line, the Confed line for work, is there someone from the city watching what's being done? Because I know when you close it down to the 2 days and now the 5 days, that we're instigating or initiating work, and you say you really don't know how efficient they are being, but is someone watching to see, like, if in fact work is actually taking place when we've taken the trains out of service? And can you just talk about that a little bit?
Yes, Mr. Morgan has a technical team, and Mr. Charter has a technical team. They have scorecards. They're monitoring every single thing. They provide us what work they're going to do, and then we check back on that. And that's even for the basic maintenance things, too.
Okay. Well, thank you for that, Mr. Manconi. I appreciate it. Just one last question, and this is really for Mr. Morgan. Mr. Morgan, you touched on the fact that the design for, I think, the Trillium line, which specifically affects my area, the Leitrim and Bowesville and Limebank stations, that those designs are close to being done, I think you said. Would that be accurate?
Yeah, I mean, they're progressing. We're still seeing some changes being considered by the design team that I would say are not insignificant, but are positive. For example, the teams are now rethinking the right now in the current design for accessibility purposes, it's a single elevator and a single ramp to get to the platform. So the redundancy to the elevator is provided by a ramp, and so they're considering now whether it would be more cost effective for them to put in two elevators, a redundant elevator bank on both sides, rather than building the ramp. And so there's still ongoing discussions. And I know that separately we'd had a conversation about looking at kind of the overall area to see what coverage and what improvements in terms of weather protection can be provided. And so we're working through that as well.
You know that I'd love to see something more detailed than the artist's rendering right now, so we can actually consult with the community. And the same with our connectivity maps. We'd like to have a virtual town hall with the community, but nobody can get their heads wrapped around the artist's rendering. When can we expect to have more detailed plans for the stations and the connectivity to those stations?
There are some that are available, and so I can have the team review what's available if you want the additional detail on those.
Yes, please.
I'll take that away with the team. Try to get the point about the renderings are not always entirely obvious. Equally, I find sometimes the drawings are overly complicated, and so we try to find a good balance there in terms of the level of detail that answers the questions.
Before the stations are built, will we get a chance to take a look at those drawings and figure out if there's anything that maybe needs a little bit of work?
Absolutely. I think we have something scheduled with your office next week, I believe, or there should be something on calendar with your office.
Okay. Thank you. Anything else, I'll take offline. Thank you, sir. Thank you, Mr. Bonconi.
Great.
Thanks, Mayor. That's
Thank
it.
You. Thanks, Councillor. Councillor Luloff, please.
Yeah, thank you. Mr. Morgan, do we have any update on expediting the sound attenuation wall along the 174? The trees have already been cut down, and I'm being asked to approve now night work. The wall would really go a long way to addressing residents' concerns about noise, as many have indicated that they're having trouble sleeping throughout the night.
Yeah, I think the latest information I have is that the design is coming out in Q3 and Q4 of this year, and then the work would start in spring of next year.
Okay, the faster that we can get it done, the better. I receive a very high number of complaints from residents about the noise at night, so I really appreciate your work on that. Thanks.
Okay, we have assigned someone to the night shift from my team to be out there and to be checking and to make sure that they're using the updated reversing devices and things. So we are aware of those complaints, and we are actively kind of trying to be present in the field to make sure that we're seeing what's happening at night as well as during the daytime.
And your team, especially Alice and Lynn, should have been very helpful. So thank you to you for that. Appreciate it. That's all my questions.
Great. Thank you, Councillor Lough. Conseiller Cloutier.
Merci beaucoup, Monsieur le Maire, and thank you, Mr. Manconi, Mr. Morgan, for the comprehensive update today on LRT Stage 1 and Stage 2. I want to follow up a little bit on other questions with respect to the vehicles, and I want to relate the presentation of Stage 1, Slide 4, where we have the issues that we have with the Alstom vehicles, and five out of the seven, as you've said, do relate directly to the vehicles, the brakes, the traction power, the passenger doors, the auxiliary power, and the HVAC. And I want to relate that to LRT Stage 2 presentation, Slide 58, where we have two vehicles that have been accepted, two are in acceptance, and seven undergoing testing. And as Mr. Manconi has said, we want reliability to be up. We want the issues with LRT Stage 1 solved by the end of August, and I absolutely support him on that. Some of the vehicles from Stage 2 will be used on the current Confederation line. Will we expect some of the vehicles from Stage 2 to be in operation by the end of August, by the end of summer?
So there's two of the Stage 2 vehicles are now in operation, and we're expecting at least two more by the end of the summer.
Okay. So the changes that I talked about in LRT Stage 1 presentation, Slide 4, have those changes to the brakes, to the traction power, to the passenger doors, the software, have those changes been incorporated in the Stage 2 vehicles that have been accepted?
Only to the extent that the fix is available today. So, and for example, the vehicle passenger doors, we're waiting for updated software to be safety certified, and once we get that safety certification, then we would roll it out onto the fleet. So All 34 plus the two Stage 2 vehicles have the original door software, but as soon as we get the updated software, it would be rolled out. Counter to that is, you know, there was a mitigation, a new cover for the inductors, so that cover for the inductors, which was a modification coming out of these problems, because it's a known fix and we have that today, it is on the additional Stage 2 vehicles.
So the vehicles that have been accepted and that are in acceptance, which is the term being used on the slide, where it is a physical fix, a cover that has been done, but when it is a software issue or it is somehow not available right now, it has not been incorporated into the vehicles. Is that correct?
Correct. It's not limited. So some of the there are fixes that are pending that are maybe hardware fixes. So for example, on the door, there's a mechanical isolation modification that is coming. We don't have that fix yet. It's a mechanical piece. We're still waiting for it. So it hasn't been implemented. So it's a mix and software and hardware. If we have the fix today, if we have the updated software today, or if we have the updated hardware solution, it will go on to the vehicles. It will go on to the Stage 2 vehicles. But there's a bit of a catch-up. If, for example, we identify a fix 6 months from now, that fix then has to be retroactively added to all the vehicles that are in service.
But as Mr. Manconi has said, of course, we want those fixes, we want that reliability to be up, and that is the elements, those are the elements that we see on slide 4 of the Stage 1 presentations. Those are the elements that we want repaired, we want fixed, we want it to be more reliable, and our deadline, by the end of August.
Right, yes.
Can you talk to me briefly about the verification process of ensuring that the new vehicles have the fixes installed, I imagine, with a physical piece, for example, the covers that ensure the traction power, the power. Those covers are in. That's easy to identify. What other verification procedures are to ensure that the vehicles are as expected when they'll be retrofitted?
When the vehicles are completed and they go into that that last step of acceptance testing, the expectation is that they run for 1,000 kilometers on the network without passengers in order to demonstrate that they're working correctly. Once they have that, then all of the documentation for those vehicles, including the inspection sheets and the software check sheets and everything, goes into something called the car history book. And my team will do a review of the car history book to make sure the documentation is in order and it reflects the latest state of the modification. They will also do a walkthrough. We also have somebody from service planning do a walkthrough to make sure all the decals are updated and are the latest ones. So there's a few checks that we do at the very end of the process before we accept it and before we allow it to go into service with the public.
Okay, thank you. As Mr. Manconi said, the elephant in the room is the vehicle, and he's also said that all is fixable, but that absolutely Alstom is the vehicles are the problem. Alstom is the problem. And our contract is with RTG. It is RTG that has the contract with Alstom. And while I know that the mayor has been on the phone with the president of Alstom, what other leverage do we have with Alstom to ensure that they are focused on the issues? And I guess the follow-up is the cause of the delay in their performing up to our expectations COVID-related or their organization, parts and resource-related? Or is it Alstom purchased Bombardier in February? Is it somehow related to that event?
I just provide some general feedback on that. I would say that it's the ability to respond to issues quickly. So it's a sense of urgency around fixing things. It has led to a number of these problems. You know, for example, you know, the door issue is not an unknown issue. It's persisted for many months now, and a fix was identified for that in December. So there are some delays on the RTG side in terms of deploying that fix. So it's about, I think it's more about reacting quickly, and identifying a fix quickly and implementing it quickly. It's that sense of urgency. I don't think, now that we're in the current pandemic, that may cause a general slowdown on some things, but many of these things could have been fixed many months ago. And so it's about the speed in which they're able to correct issues as new issues emerge, the speed at which they're able to, identify fixes to those new issues and deploy them on the fleet.
Thank you for that. I have no other questions other than commenting that it is the summum of frustration that we can't get their attention on. And like we do with RTG, that leverage belongs to RTG. And so
someone needs to be put on mute. Someone should be on mute. Councillor Cloutier, sorry, do you want to keep going?
Not at all. I was just wrapping up with respect to the leverage and the levers that we have to get Alstom to provide us and the residents of the City of Ottawa with the service that they deserve and absolutely support on the deadline of the fall that we want a reliable service on the deadline. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Merci, Councillor Leeper. Councillor Leeper. Councillor Leeper, you might be on mute. No, okay. Councillor Tierney.
Phones are dying again. Are you able to hear me now?
Sorry, yeah, we can hear you now. Go ahead.
Fantastic, thank you. I think everything has been largely covered that I was wondering about. I do want to emphasize Councillor McKenney's point with respect to the capacity of Gladstone Station. Just the Trinity Loretta development that we are probably going to approve in the next few months is going to add 900 residents. They have to have that access to the Great Transit if that development is going to be sustainable. We've got a couple of vehicles on the tracks from the Stage 2 order. How have they been performing since they were put into service?
I haven't been tracking those vehicles directly, but that's something that we can go. I can have the rail operations team pull that and give an update.
Okay. Yeah, I'd be interested in those vehicles specifically and whether they've experienced any performance issues since being put into service. That's all I had, Mr. Mayor. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Councillor Leeper. Councillor Tierney.
No questions. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Councillor Fleury.
Merci, Monsieur le Maire. Bref, just wanted to go back and want to thank first and foremost John and Michael for the fulsome presentation and clarity. I had the opportunity to go and read the RTG response, and I want to thank Mr. White for giving me some time on that. Want to go back and maybe you could speak specifically to governance. Specifically for the RTG, RTM piece. I think some of our colleagues touched on the Alstom component. Want to understand, is it something that we're asking or is RTG identifying a need to fix their own governance? And then I'll raise already my second and last question. One of the components in there spoke to a period of when the 14th and 15th trains were going to be coming in. And I didn't see that in your update, so I wonder if that's shifted or we're still waiting on clarity from RTG.
Councillor, it's John Manconi. I'm happy to respond, but I wanted to default to the city clerk. If that's information contained in that document, I just don't want to compromise council or ourselves for potential future litigation. So could I defer to Rick for direction on this one, please?
Mr. Mayor, I have not actually myself read the document. I don't believe that there is MFIPA concerns at this point in time.
Okay, Councillor Fleury.
Well, I guess then my question would apply. I just wanted to clarify if it is the city that's asking for clarity on governance or if that is a point raised by RTG, RTM.
Councillor, if I could I get back to you on that? Because I would have to refresh my memory on that one now. And I'd like to circle back with the solicitor, with the city clerk again.
Absolutely, yeah. I don't want to put us in a vulnerable position. As for the second point, which is train 14, train 15, can you comment on the dates in those documents?
Again, I'm reluctant to comment on those documents because we did not release them. You were allowed to go and read them with the clerk present. And again, I'm going to default to Rick. I'm happy to respond. I would suggest that I take these offline. And if Rick says we can respond, I will respond accordingly.
Okay. Appreciate that. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Manconi and Mr. Morgan, for the presentations. Appreciate it.